Today's program has been brought to you by the Heritage Meat Shop, located in the historic Essex Street Market in New York City. For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today on Heritage Radio Network Hot Grease, we're talking a piece of cake and Finger Lakes Riesling launch. But first up, food headlines.
What's up, Nicole?
What's up with Jack Inslee? Jack Inslee, if you're just tuning in, if this is your first time listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network, he's the executive producer of all the shows here. So, Jack, what do we have?
Well, it's been a few days since this passed, but I'd like to get your take on it. The New York City Board of Health on Thursday approved the ban on the sale of large sodas and other sugary drinks at restaurants, street carts, and movie theaters, which is really the first restriction of its kind in the country, which was, of course, brought about by Michael Bloomberg. So what's your take on this?
So it banned the sale of, 16-ounce sodas, right, Jack?
That's right, above 16.
I think we've kind of talked about this before because this whole thing has been brewing for probably about the last year. I think it's absolutely crazy. I think it's stupid. It makes entirely no sense. And there's so many holes in this entire ban. Unfortunately, you know, I saw a lot of people on Twitter and I, you know, went on this whole Twitter rant about the whole thing. A lot of people were like, I don't drink soda. I'm not a soda drinker. I'll be honest. I don't buy soda, but every now and then I do like a ginger ale with high fructose corn syrup, and I'll drink a Coke. I can't say that I buy the big, huge, big gulps, but I feel badly for like a family of four who want to go to the movies, and they buy one huge drink and they share it. So now that means they're going to have to they're going to have to buy like 4 16-ounces?
Well, according to the Times here, the only establishments that The places that get inspection grades from the health department are the ones that will be affected. So convenience stores, 7-Elevens, Big Gulps would be exempt.
So movie theaters, I think they get exempted.
They get an inspection grade, right. You know, so it's not across the board. It feels like one of those things people are reacting strongly to without reading the fine print, you know?
Well, okay, so yeah, I do think it's crazy. Some people actually probably think it's a great idea. I don't think it's going to really curb obesity among kids and adults. I think that Bloomberg should have really got behind like something around school food, such as, did you know, Jack, that almost a million styrofoam trays are being used in schools in New York City every day? I mean, and you know, you can't recycle styrofoam. So I'm like, let's do something like that really will have a huge impact, or do something like ban chocolate milk from all schools in New York City. I think something else could have been done. I think the soda ban is kind of crazy. And what I really think the craziest thing is, you know, there's a contentious kind of crazy feeling how people feel about the Brooklyn Nets. More so, I know how you feel about the Brooklyn Nets, Jack.
Completely indifferent.
But the Barclays Center and Bloomberg actually had the press conference at the Barclays Center, which is located in downtown Brooklyn, because they are the first, huge place that will take the law into effect, or the ban into effect, like today, yeah, instead of waiting to March. But it was so hilarious. It was like a classic Bloomberg news conference.
What about regulation just on what you can call a medium and a large? See, I think that was the bigger problem. I don't eat fast food very often at all, but I did recently when I went to Long Island get fast food, and I ordered the smallest possible size, and the drink was huge. It was like, you know, that they need to regulate, I think, what a small, what a medium, and what a large is considered. That might be a good start.
I mean, that's cool, but is that really going to, I mean, when you can still go in your neighborhood and buy, like, your bodega has nothing but 2-liter sodas and you can't even find, you know, anything that's semi-healthy, I just don't know if it's really going to curb the obesity. I mean, I get it. I understand the epidemic. I think that we should do something, but I just don't get the 16-ounce soda ban. You know?
We will see.
We will see. All right, folks, if you have any thoughts about the soda ban, I need to get someone in the studio, a nutritionist and an advocate for the soda ban, and someone that feels kind of strongly like me in the studio and can talk. But if you have any more thoughts on it, hit us up on Twitter. We're Heritage_Radio, or you can hit me up, Food Cultures, on Twitter. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk piece of cake. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
Obesity on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Following is a message from the Heritage Meat Shop.
Are you tired of just hearing buzzwords? Do you want to actually take part in the food revolution? Then come on down to the Heritage Meat Shop, located in New York's historic Essex Street Market, on the corner of Essex and Delancey. We have rare breed pork, beef, poultry, lamb, and goat, not to mention charcuterie that'll make you squeal. All raised right, by the right people, so you know they'll taste right. Try the meat that over 100 New York chefs ache for. Come to the Heritage Meat Shop and pick up some revolution today.
For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. This is where we're gathering, or we're getting ready for the fall. We have, what, maybe 7 days, and we're entering fall. And what a better, not a better time to talk about desserts. So in the studio to talk their new book, Piece of Cake, Home Baking Made Simple. The two Davids.
Hello.
David.
Hello.
David Menez and David Lesnick. I did okay, huh?
You did all right.
You did
okay.
Very good.
Welcome to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. So I'm so glad you're visiting. You guys came back to New York.
We did.
Native New York to talk your new book. So I want to talk geography right now. As soon as we walked in the studio, we immediately started talking about the South. And I'm like, okay, which David, which is... So we have one David here, David M.
David M's from Mississippi, born and raised.
What part of Mississippi?
Hattiesburg, so South Central, 90 miles up from the coast.
Definitely. I definitely know Hattiesburg. Okay, that's very small.
Oh,
I'm a small town girl.
We are called the hub city because if you're going to drive through Mississippi, for some reason, all roads take you through Hattiesburg. Not directly through it because we have one traffic light, but sort of off to the side. So, you know, you come near. A lot of people know who we are, but have never really stopped to visit.
And David L., you're from Jersey, right?
New Jersey.
What part of Jersey?
North Jersey, Wayne, Passaic County.
Okay. I don't know, but I'm sure the listeners probably know exactly where that
right
is.
Right near Patterson.
Okay. So how did growing up in New Jersey, what do you remember about the fall? What do you remember about baking and your like favorite local bakery in Jersey?
Apple cider, for one thing. We live in London. We have for the past 7 years, and they don't have anything like it. Their cider is alcoholic, as opposed to the good sweet caramelly stuff that we have here. Local bakeries, well, now in retrospect, I know for the most part they bake from packaged mixes, but we always would get Sunday donuts, that kind of thing. My father would always go out, would get crumb cake, which is one of my favorites, and donuts, and kind of standard fare.
So, David M., you grew up in the South. So I'm going to say not a lot of maybe apple cider.
No, not a lot of apple cider. A lot of pecans.
Definitely.
A lot of apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot of fattening cake. Caramel cake. Oh, chocolate pie. Oh, it's just all kinds of stuff.
So you guys both mentioned it before. So folks, if you're just tuning in to Hot Grease on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, both of the Davids, their new book, Piece of Cake, is in stores now. They actually own a fancy classic American bakery in London. And they, I want to talk a little bit about London classic desserts and New York City classic desserts. The difference and how people feel when they come to London and they walk into a classic bakery that totally reminds them of being in America or being in Mississippi or Jersey.
Yeah, it's for us, it was the whole experience of opening up the bakery and just moving to London was an adventure. And we realized there weren't a lot of desserts that we were used to growing up, just the stuff we had had. So there, we started baking just for our own pleasure because we wanted to find things that we knew and were familiar to us. And more and more people started enjoying it. Mostly, the English desserts are, they call everything a pudding. Steam puddings are really big. Spotted Dick was my personal favorite, not just from the name, but the fact that it was really tasty. But then everything else was slightly different from what we had. It just smaller, and David always says polite is the service of dessert, which dessert should not be a polite activity. It should have crumbs and lots of grunting.
No, there's plenty of places in London that sort of pretend to have American-style desserts, but I think they're all very kind of formulaic. Nobody really knows this stuff. It's not part of their blood, right?
Yeah.
And we bother to import ingredients from the States that we know will make a difference. Some of our recipes are just true classics. Others are family heirlooms, that kind of thing. So when you ask what people's reaction is when they come into the shop, the Americans in particular, and certain other expats as well, they all get very, very excited because they realize, you know, our portions are what they should be. It looks like what it should look like. It's,
yeah.
You know, it strikes a chord with those people as well. And very often we'll kind of talk amongst ourselves and say, well, you know, what you see so far. Like, red velvet's very, very popular. I don't really know why, but when you see other examples of red velvet in London, we all just kind of look at each other and go, no.
That's not it.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's not it. Nice that the sign says it, but that's not it.
What I love about the book, you guys take the first part, the intro of the book, and really talk or explain the Brit baking language and some of the terms that are used that are transferable or not transferable. Talk a little bit about some of the common ones that we hear here, and you have to correct your Brit folks at Outsider.
I think pudding is the main thing. When we refer to, we have a blackout cake, a chocolate blackout cake in the book. And we say that one of the elements that you have to make is the pudding. And pudding in England is just that. It covers all desserts and all categories. So you say you have to make a pudding, and everybody just says, yes, I understand. I want something for pudding. No, it's pudding. So that's one really frustrating. It took me a long time to actually catch on that they didn't get what a pudding was. So you had to show them, actually make it, and then say, see, pudding.
Yeah.
It was, you know, very basic stuff.
Well, to them,
heavy cream, double cream.
Is a generic term for dessert for them.
Creams still confuse me. Now that I'm here and I'm back, and I was we teach as well back in London at the shop. We have classes, and I still get very confused with heavy cream and double cream. I'm still not sure what country says which anymore, because here I was just doing an interview and I think I said double cream, and I think it's heavy cream here.
Correct.
Just there's all kinds of little slight differences that drive you a little nuts.
Yeah, but it's you guys have the hang of it. You totally
we're
have that
we're
angle.
still trying.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk more home baking made simple. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Snickers by Obesity on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. If you're just tuning in, we're talking piece of cake, home baking made simple with the two Davids. They are the owners of, it's called Outsider Tart, correct?
That is correct.
That's and you guys are based in London. What neighborhood?
West London, a place called Chiswick.
Okay, so if you're listening, you're taking a trip to London, go check them out. So you guys mentioned red velvet cake. Okay, so I grew up in the South, and I've had so many conversations on Hot Grease about red velvet cake. So people are doing it wrong, and you guys are doing it right. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, no, I'm not going there.
I'll go there, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And what I love about your book, you guys didn't do a standard red velvet cake. You did a red velvet whoopie pie.
Yeah.
Right.
What are some of the key ingredients? I don't remember. It's been a minute since I looked at y'all's recipe. What key ingredients did you put in here? Let me see if y'all are making it right.
Oh, no.
I'm going to leave that to the Southerners. I'm just going to sit back and listen.
My big thing is we use butter. So that's one. Where I grew up, it was all about... It was all about Crisco. So in your baking.
I'll give you the butter. Okay, you can
thank
do
you,
that.
Thank
okay.
you so much.
Okay.
So we use butter. We use food coloring. We put in a little, I like putting in a little orange peel. So it's really more of a chocolate orange cake just to cover up mm-hmm. the flavor of the food coloring that's in there. So that's there. I'm really nervous now that you're
gonna, nervous.
I'm judged. I'm being judged.
Look, she's going to smack
funny.
You down.
I'm looking at the ingredients list. You have a cocoa, you have the buttermilk.
Yep.
One of the main things I always say is the flour. I think the flour, having that southern flour,
yeah,
like the white lily. But, I mean, hey, I make it without white lily sometimes.
We do, too. We actually painstakingly went through, in London, we couldn't get, there was strong flour, and mm-hmm. which they use for bread, and then there's just this plain flour that makes everything kind of clunky and thick and not very nice. So David spent a lot of time. We found a milled French flour that we import. That's what we use.
That's
very similar.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though it's from France, don't judge. But it's close. But I agree with you completely that flour makes a huge difference. And also the quality of your dairy, because they have beautiful buttermilk there.
I love in the book how you have this entire chapter on whoopie pies. I think it's great. Because a lot of times you see classic dessert books that are American classic. People don't do the whoopie pies, or they do one or two. You guys have an entire chapter.
And one of the things about the book and the way the book's written, it's meant to be read as a book from stem to stern, and it goes from easy to more difficult all the way through. But most importantly, we stress over and over again that you should have fun. I mean, a lot of people when they bake just seem to want to stick to, okay, this is what they're telling us to do, and this is what we should do. And we try and give a bunch of different examples and different ways of changing things up so you can go out and experiment, not just stop with these, but keep changing and adding and making up your own sort of thing.
So two other regional desserts that you guys cover in the book. We have to talk. We're in Brooklyn. The Brooklyn Blackout Cake. Was that your decision, David L., to put that Brooklyn Blackout Cake in? So this is a classic one in this book, right?
Yeah. I mean, when we were putting together the recipes, we were trying to be somewhat regional about it for the British public when the book was first done. And it was because it's my neck of the woods and I knew what it was. I was very adamant about including that.
We have to tell folks, some people that may not know the history behind the Brooklyn Blackout Cake.
Oh, dear. Now you're testing me.
Well, I had to do the ingredients. You go ahead.
No, it's in many circles, so to speak, it's credited to a bakery. I don't think it's...
It's closed.
It's Ebinger's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it no longer is, but they were the first ones who developed this recipe with the rich chocolate pudding and the really dark chocolate cake, just layered.
And the photo is absolutely gorgeous in this book.
We love the photographer, Jan Baldwin. She's British. Without her, this book just wouldn't be what it is. There's no question in our minds. But with the blackout, you just slice the layers very thin, get a lot of pudding, and then you let it set, usually overnight, in the fridge, and it all just kind of, for lack of a better word, it all kind of just congeals into one delicious, gooey, very chocolatey mess. So, yeah, that was critical. And the Lady Baltimore, but that was in there for also regional reasons. It seems to be a very...
I think that's southern.
You can take this one.
You think that's southern?
That's classy southern, though. You know what I mean? It's like the Carolinas that I'm not sure we should claim from time to time. But I think it's southern. We had a variation on it that we... that was just a completely bastardized version of that that we called Lady Baltimore that was more
so sadly
sweet
I
and
just
sugary.
I mean,
what do you think it is if it's if not
I
sugary?
Don't know. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I grew up in Georgia. I mean, kind of, you know, deep south Georgia, not deep south, but I grew up in Athens, and I never heard of a Lady Baltimore cake until I moved here and had it for the first time in New York City. So I really don't know. I'm gonna have to make yours myself and then try to taste some. Yeah, I never heard of it and never really made it, so maybe
I've never heard of it in this the fashion that we do. And when we started researching all the different ways it was made, never came across the way Yvonne, who's the woman that there's mm-hmm. always one woman in town that made all the cakes.
Yeah.
The way Yvonne made it, I think she made it up, but it was more, she had a sweet tooth, I yeah. tell you, and only one left. And it was incredibly, incredibly.
Oh my God. Oh my way.
She was a beauty, but you know, get her to smile and you jump back a little. Oh, I'm so sorry, Yvonne. But it was just knock your teeth out sweet. It had like a praline almost in between the layers. And then wow. the meringue on the outside with the, it was
good
though.
I'm going to have to totally make this. So I have to ask you this question before you guys, we move on to wine. So most of the recipes that's in this book, can we find them in Outsider Tart in London? So when we're making these, can we close our eyes and think that we're sitting or walking through the cafe or the bakery and getting something?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We change the recipe. We change the menu in the shop every day. It just depends on what we wake up and feel like making that day. But on any given day, there'll be many more than what's in the recipe book. We can definitely find elements and recipes that are in this book on the shop floor on any day.
Cool.
Yep.
Thank
so
you.
So you should come visit.
Thank you.
Definitely.
If I can just say quickly, we're at Rizzoli tomorrow night, not tomorrow, Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sorry, for our book launch and book signing.
And we would love, if anybody's around, especially you, we'd love you guys to come
yeah,
out and visit.
That's in Soho.
And
we have
samples.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I have to come by. So if
we
folks
have
are listening,
samples.
You're in New York City. That's yeah. located. I think that's maybe Prince.
No, not even longer. It's just the Uptown one
just
on
the
57th
and 5th.
Between 5th and 6th.
Oh, that one closed. So there you have it. So. And for folks who are on social media, how can they find you guys?
They can find us online. You can see my our exploits of what we're doing. At Outsider Tart, all one word, on Twitter.
Cool. And folks, pick it up. It's titled Piece of Cake, Home Baking Made Simple, Brownies, Cupcakes, Cookies, Whoopie Pies, and more. Thank you guys for joining me.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Stick around.
We'll be back.
We're going to take a quick break and talk Finger Lakes Riesling launch. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The show was engineered today by Joe G and produced by myself and Jack Inslee. All right, folks, it's wine time here on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio to talk the annual Finger Lakes Riesling launch is winemaker Brandon Seeger. Brandon.
Hi, Nicole.
Welcome to Hot Grease.
Thanks for having me in Hot Grease.
So, you know, I have to ask you, Finger Lakes winemaking. Some people may not know that wine is actually being made in the Finger Lakes region of New York City.
How could they not know that?
I don't know, but it's a lot of people that don't know that.
All right, let's talk about it. The Finger Lakes is right in the middle of New York State, about 3 hours away if you drive fast, 4 if you drive slow. depending on how you drive, but it's right in the middle of the states. We have local wine being made right here in New York State.
So how many winemakers you think in Finger Lakes?
There are over 100 in the Finger Lakes.
Oh, wow.
300 in the state of New York.
Wow. So this annual launch, I didn't realize that you guys had this. I saw the email from New Amsterdam Market. I think you did an event there yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, wow, they do an annual Riesling launch. How did that come about?
Absolutely. Well, so sort of our bread and butter of winemaking in the Finger Lakes is Riesling. It's a specific grape, not Chardonnay, not Cabernet. Riesling is sort of our bread and butter. It's what we do best. It's a grape that grows well in our climate. It's cold in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And Riesling does well in a climate like that. So that's sort of, you know, our go-to grape. And it grows well every year, no matter how cold it is, no matter how hot it is. Every year it just shines.
So is it that a few dozen winemakers that are doing great Riesling, do they get together and decide, you know, we're going to, you know, do a tasting or do a promotion or marketing piece during this time period? And is it always in the beginning of the fall?
Has happened, you know, historically in September. The timing there is simply to make sure that everyone has the vintage in the bottle by that time, because people bottle wine at different times of the year. But typically by September, everyone's got their Riesling bottled up and it's ready to go, ready to open and drink before the new Riesling comes in for the next vintage, which is happening as we speak.
So I have to ask you this. I mean, I talk a lot about local voyeurism right here on High Grease on Heritage Radio Network. NOFA NYC, I know they're doing their whole Eat Local Month. There's so many different things going on with different organizations about eating local. How has that whole conversation over the past 4 years helped specifically the Finger Lakes wine industry?
Well, it's really a big deal if you think about it, Nicole, because we've always sort of had local beer, microbrews.
Mm-hmm.
And people are totally into local beer, and that's great. But there's been sort of a resistance to local wine. People don't think about, when I order a glass of wine, I'm going to order a New York wine. One of the beautiful things about living in New York City is that you have the entire wine world at your fingertips. You can get anything. You will never get sick of shopping for wine from all over the world here in New York City. So people don't always put one and two together and think, ooh, I'm having local food. I should probably drink local wine as well.
I'll have to say this. I have been at dinner with food folks, and they were like, New York wine. And I'm like, no, wait. I have to tell them, no, it's a lot. I've been fortunate enough and have, you know, friends, Nicole is sitting here in the studio, and been to different restaurants, and I make it a point to try it. But I think people just really don't know, and they have this, the wine snobs. That's Absolutely. What I call them. They're like, New York and wine. They don't know. That's why I think this Riesling launch is really a good thing, and people really understand and know that.
It's absolutely huge, because it's important that everyone tastes the wine. You can make the decision on your own whether you like it or you don't. That's your business. But you absolutely must try it, because it is part of our local economy, and that's so important. You know, let's not forget there are bad wines from France. And there are bad wines from California, but we don't often think about that. They say, oh, French wine is good. California wine is good. Well, you know what? New York wine is good, too. Yeah, there are some stinkers out there. Totally. But there are some really, really good wines coming from really 100 miles away.
So, you know, earlier on the show, the first two segments, I had the guys from over the pond, across the pond, talking about desserts. Is Riesling a great wine for desserts?
Riesling is the food wine. It goes from appetizer to dessert. One of the really cool things about being a winemaker and working predominantly with Riesling is that you can do so much with it. There are other grapes that really are one-trick ponies. Riesling goes from sweet to dry. It can be steely, laser-focused acid minerality. It can be sweet and luscious, heavy for dessert. There's so much you can do with sparkles. In Germany, they make sparkling Riesling. You can do just about anything with it. So it's really the best food wine that you could possibly go to. If you have a weird pairing and you're having a dinner party and someone's bringing artichokes and I don't know what to do with that, you know, Riesling should be your go-to wine when you don't know what to pair, because it goes so well with food. It's an acid-driven wine, which not all white wines are. And that makes it just ideal for food, especially dessert, which can be heavy, creamy, sweet, heavy, sometimes light. Riesling pairs perfectly.
And lastly, someone's listening to Hot Grease right now. They're like, huh, let me go out and try a New York Riesling. What do you suggest?
Well, I would, of course, suggest one of mine.
And that is?
And that is from Red Newt Cellars. We're on the east side of Seneca Lake. But to be honest, any Riesling that you find on a shelf in New York City is going to be a good Riesling.
And so your wine spot, do you have one Riesling or do you have more than...
We have many. The cool thing about the grape is that not only can you do a lot with it, but it's also very expressive of where it's grown. You know, we throw this word terroir around, which is a very wine snobby word.
I've heard it before. I don't know what the hell it
I don't know what it means either, but ask the French. But to be honest, Riesling is one of those grapes that really does express terroir. You can tell where that grape is grown. It's all about the soil and it's all about the climate, a little bit of the winemaking as well. But we make many, many single vineyard wines from Riesling, and they all express themselves differently in terms of fruit expression, in terms of acidity, in terms of minerality. They're all completely unique, and that's what makes Riesling so cool.
So folks who are listening and they want to know more about the Finger Lakes Riesling launch, the annual launch.
Absolutely. All September long, you can go to rieslinglaunch.com. Rieslinglaunch.com. That tells you where you can buy Finger Lakes Riesling in New York City. It tells you the events that are happening.
This is a big deal.
Yeah, of course. And you can always, if you find a Finger Lakes Riesling that you love, or hate for that matter, you can tweet about it with the hashtag FLXWine.
And I have to say this, shout out to Bedvine. They were actually on my last show. And if I'm not mistaken, that's my local wine shop. I live two blocks from there. I know without a doubt they serve Finger Lakes Riesling. Did you do something with them?
I did something
with them last week. Okay, so shout out to them. So if you're looking for a place to buy, go to Bedvine and Bedside. Thank you so much, Mr. Seeger,
for coming
on Hot Grease. You'll have to, once a quarter we need to have you
on the
show to talk wine stuff.
Right, we'll have more wine.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Listeners, thank you for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can join me here every Monday live at 3:30 Eastern Time. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.